Welcome to episode 28 of the Fredcast for the week of August the 7th, 2006. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, we're going to talk about the results so far in this year's tour of Germany. After that, more on Floyd Landis and the fallout that's happened after his doping scandal. Of course, there's more news besides Floyd Landis. Oscar Pereiro says he is the Tour champion. Swiss doctors saying that new doping tests are needed in the world of cycling. A former racer says no doping, no winning, and much more news. After the news, commentary on where we're at with Floyd Landis and with his doping scandal. And then I'll answer some listener email. After the listener email, quick ride review, an upcoming ride, some new products, and some shout-outs. And of course, as always, PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. To the Fredcast. Now, the next major race on the Pro Tour calendar is one I mentioned on last week's show, the Tour of Deutschland, also known as the Tour of Germany. Now, the Tour of Germany began on August 1st with a 5.5-kilometer individual time trial in Düsseldorf. From there, the race has wound its way in a counterclockwise direction through central and southern Germany, including brief forays into Austria and Switzerland. The final stage of the race will take place tomorrow, Wednesday, with a 172-kilometer stage from Bad Krozingen to Karlsruhe near the Black Forest. Now, the prologue time trial was won by Discovery rider Vladimir Gusev from Russia, and he kept the lead in the general classification all the way until stage 4 when Eric Zabel took control of the Tour's yellow leader's jersey. Now, last year's winner of the Tour of Germany was Gerolsteiner's Levi Leipheimer from the United States, who won stage 5 of this year's Tour, which had been shortened by 30 kilometers from the originally planned route due to weather in the region. His win brought him up to 4th in the general classification, but Jens Voigt's 4th place finish that day helped catapult him to the top of the GC. Voigt won the 197-kilometer 6th stage by 2 seconds over Leipheimer, who was then just 24 seconds behind Voigt for the overall lead. That is, until today's stage 7. A 38-kilometer individual time trial that saw Voigt decimate the competition and cement what should be an overall victory after tomorrow's 8th and final stage. Jens Voigt is now sitting 1 minute and 28 seconds ahead of 2nd place Leipheimer and 3rd place Andrei Kazeshkin of Astana, who is 2 minutes and 23 seconds behind. Tomorrow's final stage, again, is 172 kilometers. Now, the stage is mostly flat, so unless some tragedy occurs, I fully expect that Jens Voigt is going to be crowned the champion of this year's Tour of Deutschland. Now, speaking of Astana, you may be interested to know that the first stage of this year's Tour of Germany was a 198-kilometer stage from Düsseldorf to Bielefeld, and it was won by Kazakhstan's Asan Bazayev from Team Astana. This was a triumphant return for the former Liberty Seguros team, after they were banned for participation in this year's Tour de France because 5 of their riders were under investigation for their suspected links to the Operación Puerto doping scandal. We talked about this last week. Those 5 members eventually, after the Tour, were cleared as having nothing to do with the Puerto scandal. Nevertheless, with those 5 having been implicated and having been banned from the Tour, there simply were not enough Astana riders in order to field the minimum-sized team for the Tour. So for them to have won Stage 1 in this race really was their way of coming back and saying, we're here, we're not dopers, and we're serious about the sport of cycling. So congratulations to them. And it looks like after tomorrow, congratulations will probably also be in store for Jens Voigt and Team CSC, because it looks like they're going to cruise to victory tomorrow in this year's 2006 Tour of Germany. And once the Tour of Germany is over, the peloton will ride into the Basque country of Spain On August 12th, they'll take part in the single-day 227-kilometer circuit race Clásicas Ciclista San Sebastián. It looks like all of the UCI Pro Tour teams are going to be present. This is a difficult one-day race that includes no fewer than six climbs, one Category 1, three Category 2, and two Category 3 climbs, the last of which is 15 kilometers from the end of the day's racing. Following that, they head off to Belgium and Holland for the Eneco Tour from August 16th through the 23rd, and then the single-day Grand Prix West France, August 27th. Now, right around the same time comes the Vuelta a España, the third of the Grand Tours in the UCI Pro Tour, the three Grand Tours being the Giro d'Italia, of course the Tour de France, and now the Vuelta a España. This takes place August 26th through September 17th, and that is always an exciting event and one that I personally am really looking forward to. Now, after that, the Tour of Poland takes place September 4th through the 10th. So there's a lot of racing left to go. Even after the Tour of Poland, there's still more racing to go. So stay tuned to OLN here in the United States or any of the other channels around the world that carry professional cycling. And don't forget, of course, online cycling.tv. Now, of course, the news that's on everybody's mind this week is the same news that was on everybody's mind last week, and that is the doping scandal concerning Floyd Landis. As I told you last week, Floyd had requested that his B sample, or his second sample, from that fateful day at the Tour de France, he requested that that sample be tested. The test results are now in, and they were in this past weekend, and the results of the tests on Floyd's B sample were indeed positive, confirming the previous findings that he had an elevated testosterone to epitestosterone ratio. And we talked a little bit last week about that was, and in a moment I'm going to expand on that a little bit. But as a result of this test, there is no doubt that over the next days, weeks, and months, we can expect first what exactly happened, which is that Phonak, his team, fired him. Two, he will probably be stripped of his Tour de France title. Oscar Pereiro, the second place rider as of now, will be declared the champion. Floyd will end up facing disciplinary action, including a possible 2-year suspension from professional cycling. And this was interesting, something that I learned over the weekend while I was watching one of the 24-hour news channels. They were interviewing Phil Liggett. And Phil explained that under the new Rider Code of Ethics in the UCI Pro Tour, Floyd will not be eligible to join another Pro Tour team for at least 4 years. Floyd's doping is essentially going to end his cycling career. I expect that there will be months of legal wrangling as Floyd tries to appeal what seems right now to be a pretty conclusive result. But he's going to go through all of the same machinations that Tyler Hamilton went through and that Roberto Harris went through to try to clear his name. In the end, however, the results as of today look extremely conclusive. And if the tests are true and if those results are right, then there's no doubt in my mind that Floyd should be stripped of his title and should be shunned from professional cycling. Now, since the last podcast, we've learned a couple of interesting things about the tests that Floyd has failed. First of all, one of the things that we learned last week was that there were reports in the media that Floyd's blood showed evidence of synthetic testosterone. And we talked about that last week. And I told you that if he had an elevated ratio of testosterone to epitestosterone, but if there were no synthetic markers found in his urine, then he could make a pretty good argument that there was simply an imbalance in his body. But once they found synthetic testosterone in his urine, then it becomes very difficult for him to make a case that he was not doping. Another thing we learned this week, and we learned this from one of Floyd's doctors, was that the ratio of testosterone to epitestosterone, at least in the A sample, was 11-1. Now, the legal limit in professional cycling is 4-1. That means that his ratio was nearly three times the legal limit of what's allowed in a professional cyclist when it comes to the testosterone to epitestosterone ratio. Now, all of this gets a little bit confusing, and last week I did give you an explanation of how these tests are run, but then I got an email this week from a listener, Mike from San Diego. Now, Mike, I'm going to read to you his email. He says, as things would have it, I'm a chemist who works in the pharmaceutical industry. I got my PhD years ago in the field of steroid chemistry, and he's quick to point out that his degree is in making steroids, not in taking them. Now, Mike goes on to say, I can say pretty candidly that things are not looking good for Floyd. The initial test that Floyd seems to have failed, and that's the testosterone to epitestosterone ratio test, is easily undermined by clever doping doctors who administer epitestosterone along with doses of testosterone. We talked about that last week. This keeps the ratio of the two within normal limits, but not the levels. And here's the key part and the critical part. But the test that Floyd's A samples failed next, the carbon isotope test, is a real problem. Assuming that his B samples confirm the findings of the A samples, which they did, the isotope test can really show very definitely when testosterone in the body does not come from the food that you eat, in other words, occurring naturally, but instead from an injection or a patch. This is because the natural testosterone and other steroids in your body are derived from your diet, ultimately from plants. Synthetic or semi-synthetic steroids that are added to your bloodstream have different ratios of isotopes of carbon, carbon-12 and carbon-13, in them than you get in your diet. This has been documented very carefully and clearly in many scientific papers. The doped steroids can therefore clearly and accurately be found using sensitive isotope analysis techniques. And this is done using what's called mass spectrometry. He goes on to say, scientific jargon aside, Floyd and his doctors would have to be nuts to have given him testosterone after a difficult race stage. Testosterone has no clear acute effects. It takes weeks to build muscle, not hours. So based on science, I have my doubts. But based on faith in Floyd, I have hopes that another explanation can be found. And by the way, this is something that I'm going to talk about later on after the news, is the fact that I've gotten just a ton of email on this subject, more email than I've gotten on any other subject since I've been doing the Fredcast. And there are people who are really ripping themselves up when they think about this subject. On the one hand, they look at it objectively, and they say, scientifically, it seems clear from the test results that Floyd's a doper. But on the other hand, they look at it subjectively, and they look at the man who they think Floyd Landis is, and of course, unless you know the man personally, you don't really know, and they say, no, Floyd couldn't have done this. I can't believe he would do something like this. And by the way, this goes for not just Americans, so it's not just an American bias. I'm getting emails from all across the world from people who are tearing themselves up, looking at it objectively and looking at it subjectively and trying to reconcile their feelings on this. Nevertheless, in the eyes of the UCI and in the eyes of USA Cycling, so far it appears that Floyd Landis is a doper. And you all know my feelings about that. And I've gotten enough emails from the rest of you to believe that many of you out there in the audience agree. Now, later on in the show, I'm going to tell you how you can talk back and let the rest of the Fredcast listeners know how you feel on this subject, because it's obvious from the volume of email that all of you care and you're very energized on this subject. And I'm going to make it worth your while. So stay tuned. We're going to talk in a little while about how you can talk back and how you might be able to win something as a result. Well, in the past few days, as you can imagine, Floyd Landis has not been a shrinking violet. He has not just gone home to Murrieta, California, and hidden behind the walls of his gated community that right now is very, very well guarded by the local police. No, instead, he's gone on a media blitz. He's been all over the television, all over the media in the last couple of days, giving interviews to anyone who will listen, trying to make his case and clear his name. Now, you remember, even I told you last week that his appearance on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno had been postponed. He's on The Tonight Show this evening. It'll be interesting to see the take on it when he's on The Tonight Show. But nevertheless, he's been all over the place. He's been talking about this, and he said a couple of interesting things. First of all, he said that when this whole scandal broke, he made the mistake of coming out and making all sorts of explanations as to what might have caused the imbalance in his bloodstream, in the testosterone and the epitestosterone. Remember, he talked about drinking beer, drinking Jack Daniels. He talked about being somebody who had an elevated testosterone level to begin with. He talked a little bit about dehydration. He's not talking about those things anymore. Now, he's saying that there's something wrong with the tests, period. There may be something wrong at the lab. He talked about the fact that this is supposed to be a blind test where the writer's name isn't known by the lab personnel, but he's now coming out and accusing the lab personnel of knowing that that was his sample when they tested it, which would be a violation of the rules. He's saying that there may be some sort of a conspiracy or an agenda that is causing him to be the target of what he says is an unfair allegation, because he's continuing to defend himself and say that he didn't do this. Now, again, before you jump down my throat, remember what I said last week. Everyone in prison is innocent, and they will tell you that they're innocent as long as you'll listen. So that just because I'm reporting the fact that Floyd is trying to defend himself doesn't necessarily mean that I believe him. So just keep that in mind. Now, along the same lines, a fan of Floyd's, or at least a cycling fan, a very rich one in San Diego, California, has offered Floyd $100,000 to take a polygraph test. And he said in his letter to Floyd, quote, "I don't want to believe you're a cheater. I want to believe you earned your victory through grit, determination, and hard training. But I need proof." Now, the offer came from Michael Robertson, who's the founder of several high-tech communication companies, including one that you may have heard of, MP3.com. And he's asking him to take a lie detector test to prove, or at least in Robertson's mind, to prove to Robertson that Floyd is not a doper. Now, what about USA Cycling? Now, the UCI has referred the Landis case to USA Cycling for disciplinary action against the American cyclist. And as required by its charter with the U.S. Olympic Committee, USA Cycling has now formally referred the case to the United States Anti-Doping Agency, or the USADA. And that's the organization solely responsible for the adjudication of anti-doping cases involving American athletes in the Olympic movement. Now, here's the statement from USA Cycling. "To maintain the same level of sensitivity and respect for both the rights of all athletes and due process as the Landis case enters the formal disciplinary phase, we will continue to refrain from comment until USADA reaches a final determination and all appeals are exhausted." This is according to Steve Johnson, the chief executive officer of USA Cycling. But he went on to say, quote, "As the governing body responsible for the sport of cycling in the United States of America and American athletes racing abroad, USA Cycling will continue to maintain a zero-tolerance policy for doping in our sport. Fair play is paramount in maintaining the integrity of our sport and the athletes who participate in it at any level and discipline." So what about that second-place finisher in this year's Tour de France, Oscar Pereiro from Spain? Well, a couple of days ago, he came out and he said, quote, "Right now, I feel like the winner of the Tour de France. It's a victory for the whole team." Now, remember, Pereiro's the member of the Costa Epargne Iles Baleares team, and he's going to become the first Spaniard to win the Tour since Miguel Indurain's last win in 1995. So one of the questions I've been asked a lot over the past couple of days is whether or not this is the first time that such a thing has ever happened, that a Tour champion has been stripped of the victory and the victory has been given to someone else. I read in my local newspaper that it was the first time, but that's not true. This will be the first time that someone has lost their Tour championship as a result of doping allegations, but it's not the first time that someone has been stripped of the championship. That dubious distinction goes to rider Maurice Garin, who was the winner in 1903 and was declared the winner in 1904, and then he was stripped of that win when it was found that he had taken a train through part of the route in order to try to win the race. Now, he did win, but it was subsequently determined that he had used the train to do it, and therefore he was stripped of his title. From my perspective, though, what Garand did is on the same level as what Floyd is accused of doing. You see, back in 1904, they didn't have access to artificial steroids. They didn't have access to all these blood doping techniques that we've talked about ad infinitum over the last couple of months. No, in those days, if they wanted to gain a competitive advantage and they wanted to use technology to do it, using the train was probably the best way. So I think that the two are very similar and that they're both very serious offenses. And while today it may sound quaint or it may be funny that he tried to use the train, I think that back then his offense was just as serious as the one that Floyd is now accused of in 2006. So while Floyd is going to start fighting the allegations against him, a Swiss doctor, in fact, the head of a leading international anti-doping laboratory in Lausanne, Switzerland, and this is the Swiss anti-doping laboratory that's used by the International Olympic Committee quite frequently, came out and said that we need to refine the testing methods that are currently being used specifically to detect the use of testosterone in athletes. And as an example, he used Floyd Landis as well as the American runner Justin Gatlin that we talked about last week. And what he said was quite interesting and something that I addressed in last week's show, and that is that the tests that are currently being used to detect testosterone in athletes were set up back in 1982. Now, that doesn't seem that long ago, but in 1982, when athletes were using testosterone, they were using massive amounts. As a matter of fact, Floyd Landis's own doctor said earlier this week that he's seen in bodybuilders testosterone levels of 100 to 1. And remember, Floyd's accused of having a level of 11 to 1. So people were using, way back then, much more massive volumes of testosterone. It was much easier to detect. And so if Floyd erred, and as a result of that error, we were able to detect his testosterone, it's entirely possible, says this doctor, that our testing methods are simply inadequate, and he may have been doping for a while, and that may be why we haven't caught him earlier. Now remember, Floyd has had a very, very successful year this year, Paris-Nice, Tour of California, etc. And so it's possible, and I'm not making an accusation here, it's just a conjecture on my part, it's possible that he may have been doping earlier and we just weren't able to detect it because our testing methods aren't good enough. Something that I mentioned last week, it's nice to hear a professional come out and say the exact same thing. Hopefully people will sit up and take notice. And from somebody accused of doping to somebody who detects doping to now somebody who admits to doping but not having been caught. Now, before I give you this story, I want to say that I'm a little bit uncomfortable with it. It comes from the Italian newspaper La Gazzetta dello Sport. Now, this is one of Italy's most well-reputed sporting magazines, but what I don't like about the story is that it's based on an interview with a, quote, unnamed retired Italian sprinter. Now, I don't like unnamed sources because there's no way to check an unnamed source and there's no way to challenge an unnamed source. So take this story with a grain of salt, but let me tell you what this former athlete had to say. They were talking about whether or not an athlete today can win a major race like the Giro or like the Tour or like the Vuelta without doping. According to this purported former athlete, there's no way it can be done. And he says, quote, "Do I know a racer that wins clean? None. No one can win the Giro without doping. I don't believe it's possible. Cycling is a dirty world and it will stay that way forever." He went on to say that doping is entrenched at the highest levels of the sport. He said, quote, "When you arrive at a team, they tell you, the thing is like this. This is the reality. If you want a race, you'll need help. I didn't need a trainer. The team got me everything I needed." He went on to say, "I took EPO every 3 days for a month and human growth hormone every 2 days to increase my muscular mass. I also took capsules of testosterone. That way, I could train longer and better. For EPO, I used injections for insulin with the minimum doses, and I introduced it myself subcutaneously. I did the shots myself. If I had to do the bad things, I preferred to do them myself. I also took vitamins, sugar, and creatine intravenously. This is what I've been talking about the last couple of weeks. And this is the question that I keep getting asked at cocktail parties and at business meetings when people know that I'm a cyclist. And it goes like this. Isn't everybody in cycling dirty? And I keep saying, no, they're not dirty. That there are a few bad apples and that we need to weed them out and so we can get on with the sport the way that it should be. To read something like this is very, very troubling, very upsetting, because it seems to say that everyone at every level of professional cycling is knee-deep in this doping stuff. And if that's true, I think we're all in trouble. Okay, let's talk about some good news, shall we? In the United States city of Phoenix, Arizona, cyclists, runners, walkers have been terrorized over the last more than a year as someone has been going around and shooting at them randomly and killing them. Thankfully, last week, two suspects were arrested. Hopefully, this will end the shooting spree, making it safer to get back on your bike or to get back out there running in the city of Phoenix. Now, the two suspects are believed to have killed at least six pedestrians and cyclists in what became known as the serial shooter case. Now, during the same time period, dozens more were raped and injured, and the police believe that the snipers and the rapist may be one and the same. So for those of you that are in Phoenix, I hope that this is the end of a very long, dark chapter. Get back out there on your bikes, get back out there running, get back in shape. It's good to know that the police were able to catch these guys, and hopefully they're going to be going away for a very, very long time. Well, from one positive police story to one that maybe you won't think is so positive, I want to tell you the story of Portland, Oregon bike messenger Ayla Holland. Now, Ayla is a messenger in Portland, and she rides a fixed gear bike. Now, if you're not familiar with fixies or fixed gear bikes, these are single speed bikes, no derailleurs, no shifters, and typically they have no brakes because these are usually track bikes, something that is used on the track where you don't need brakes and it's illegal to use gears. What Ayla got in trouble for was the fact that her bike doesn't have brakes. And in Oregon, the law says that in order to ride your bike on the road, it has to be equipped with a braking mechanism. Now, if you ask Ayla, she's going to tell you that she is able to brake her bike and she's become quite skilled at it by skidding to a stop. And you see fixed gear cyclists do this all the time. If you've ever seen them out there on the road or on a Century, which again, I've said this before, amazes me that they ride a Century on a fixed gear bike. Nevertheless, a Multnomah judge has said that the Portland police were correct when they gave Ayla a traffic ticket last month for riding in downtown Portland without a brake. So I'm sure that Ayla is probably going to appeal this. Nevertheless, those of you who are out there riding fixies, if you're riding them in Oregon or in any other jurisdiction in the United States or elsewhere, I recommend that you check to see what the laws are as to whether or not that bike needs to be equipped with a brake when you're riding on the city streets. Now, I mention this not just because I think that the police in Portland may be cracking down on this, but because I read an article recently in the Wall Street Journal, of all places, that was talking about fixed gear bikes and about their growing popularity. And it talked about the fact that in some cities, the police are going to start cracking down on the fact that these bikes don't have brakes. So those of you out there riding fixies, be careful, because you might be the target for a citation. Okay, all you Texas-based Freds, here's a way for you to show the world how much you love cycling. You can now get a Texas license plate for your car with the likeness of Lance Armstrong and the words, "Share the road, y'all," written underneath. All you have to do is go to the Texas Department of Transportation, and I put a link in the show notes, and you can apply for one of these special Share the Road license plates. Now, every time you order a plate, it's going to raise $22 for bicyclist and motorist safety education programs at the Texas Bicycle Coalition. Now, these plates are going to cost you an additional $30 every year above and beyond your normal vehicle registration fee. But if you're a Fred, it's a small price to pay to get that picture of Lance Armstrong on your license plate. And finally tonight, I wanted to share with you a story that I found in the Burlington Free Press from Burlington, Vermont. This is in the Tuesday, August the 8th edition, and it's a column by a gentleman by the name of Ed Shamey. And the column is entitled, Looks Deceiving on the Bicycle Circuit. And I'm going to paraphrase, but I've put a link in the show notes so that you can read it yourself. But basically, what the columnist was talking about was the fact that he used to look at people on the road on their bikes, and there were two kinds. There were sort of scraggly-looking guys without a helmet on, you know, bikes that squeak along, and usually they're carrying maybe a milk crate or they've got a skateboard with them. Just sort of not your everyday cyclist, just somebody who's using the bike for transportation. Nevertheless, those people he knew were going to run stop signs, were going to disobey the rules of the road, and he knew that he had to watch out for those people. Now, his second cyclist example was your typical Fred. Lycra, nice helmet, some nice gadgets on the handlebars, and as he puts it, a bike whose value exceeds the value of your car and your home combined. Sounds like a Fred to me. What's troubling is that he used to look at Freds and know that they had good bike handling skills, that they were going to follow the rules of the road, and that he could treat them with the same respect on the road that he could any motorist. Now, however, he's saying that the Freds are becoming just as reckless as the scraggly guy on his way to the liquor store. So my question to you is this. Whether you live in Vermont or not, which Fred are you? Are you the Fred that the writer expects? In other words, the Fred who is going to obey the rules of the road and who isn't going to do the things that would potentially endanger their own lives or might endanger others on the road? Or are you the reckless Fred that the columnist is talking about? It's my hope that in a year, the columnist will come back and notice that there's been another sea change and that the Freds have gone back to obeying the rules of the road and have no longer taken up their reckless ways. I'm hoping that you will help me make that sea change. With that, that's going to do it for the news for this edition of the Fredcast. Well, before we get to that listener mail that I promised you that I was going to answer tonight, I wanted to clear up what appears to be a misconception out there, or at least a misinterpretation of my motives when I reported on the Floyd Landis scandal last week. So I want to read to you something that I posted to the blog today at www.thefredcast.com, because as I've said, I've gotten more email on this subject than on any other since I started the Fredcast. And what I wrote was, it seems I've been taking a bit of heat over my last show and the apparent lack of outrage over the Floyd Landis doping scandal. Several messages have been posted on the site and on the Fredcast forums, and I've received a couple of emails with the same sentiments. Now, first of all, I want all of you to know that I welcome the criticisms as much as I welcome the accolades and the praise. It only serves to make the show better. Now, what's interesting to me is that some people have even thanked me for not censoring their negative comments. And I said on the site, for the record, I would never delete comments just because they weren't complimentary. The only comment I've ever deleted from the site, aside from blog spam talking about Viagra and Xanax and things like that, the only comment I've ever deleted from the site is the one that did not contain the poster's true information so that I could contact them and have a dialogue. Now, when I recorded the last show, let's remember where we were in time. The allegations against Floyd were just a few days old. The A sample had been tested, and he hadn't even had time to request that the B sample be tested. There was enough information for him to be rightfully suspended by his Phonak team, but not enough for him to be subject to disciplinary action by the UCI. Now, at the time, I commented on the show about all of the reasons why the test could have been wrong. And I also commented that if the B sample came back positive, then Floyd should be rightfully shunned. As far as I was concerned, my comments were measured, not muted or biased, as other people have suggested, but merely carefully worded until the B sample results were in. In other words, I wasn't ready to make a rush to judgment. So, let me be entirely clear so that everyone understands my position on this, so that it doesn't look like I've been inconsistent. The results of Floyd's B sample are now in, and the results are conclusive. Floyd has been shown to have failed two drug tests with a testosterone to epitestosterone ratio that's nearly three times the legal limit. There are even reports in the press that the carbon isotope tests have been shown that he had synthetic testosterone in his blood. According to the rules of cycling, it has been proven that he is a doper. Unless he can prove otherwise, and he still has the opportunity to do so, then he is and ever shall be a doper. I stand by what I said on last week's show. He should be stripped of the Tour de France title. He should be fired by his team. And he should be subjected to a severe sanction by the UCI. Now, my feelings on doping and dopers are well known. I've ranted on the subject on the show plenty of times. Dopers cheat. They lie. They are unethical and unsportsmanlike. They sully the reputations of the rest of the peloton through guilt by association and give the sport a bad name. They should not be a part of professional cycling, or any sport for that matter. Until and unless he can prove otherwise, this includes Floyd Landis. Now, having said all of that, I still place myself, and I'm going to be clear about this, I still place myself in the category of the riders that I discussed back in the news. Those riders who look at this situation, we look at it objectively, and we say, the evidence is clear. Floyd has been proven to have doped according to all the testing protocols that are in place as of today. But on the other hand, subjectively, I'd like to think that it's not true. I'd like to hope that there is somebody out there who is a leader in professional cycling who isn't doping. And I'd love it to be the person who won the Tour de France, whether that is an American or whether that is a European or whether that's a Martian. It doesn't matter to me. But I had hoped that Floyd wasn't a doper. And so far, it appears that he is. And if that's the case, then that's it. The man should not be in professional cycling. I hope that's clear for you. If not, let me know. But more importantly, and this is something I talked about earlier too, I want to hear from you. Now listen, we've talked about things before on the show where I've gotten a little bit of voicemail and a little bit of audio feedback from you. This time I'm hoping to induce you to call that voicemail line or click the audio button on the website and record a comment, or to record a comment and email it to me, because I've gotten so much email on the subject of doping in general and the Floyd Landis affair in particular that I want to hear from you, and I want your fellow Fredcast listeners to hear from you. So, over the next few days, up until this coming Sunday, please send me voicemails, audio comments in the email, or use the audio button on the website to send me audio comments. I will try to play as many of them on the next show as I can, and to try to sort of induce you into sending me your audio comments, I'm going to pick one comment at random to receive a special cycling product that I know you're going to like. And I will announce on the next show what that is. But trust me, it's going to be worthwhile. So please send in your audio comments and let your fellow Fredcast listeners hear what you have to say, pro or con, about doping in general and about Floyd Landis in particular. I'm really looking forward to getting your comments. You can send those to thefredcast@gmail.com, or you can call the listener hotline at 206-203-FRED. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Okay, so let's get to answering and reading some of the listener mail. And this is where I wanted to run that David Letterman / Perry Como song about getting letters, but couldn't find it on the web. And besides, I think it's probably copyrighted anyway. So nevertheless, our first letter comes to us from Casey, who is in Santa Clarita, California. And Casey writes in to follow up on my story last week about the cyclist who had the run-in with the Girls Gone Wild tour bus. And he says, here's my cyclist getting hit story. My friend Rich was doing the Sea to Summit climb a few weeks ago when he was hit by a buffalo. Yes, a buffalo. But the story gets even better. The buffalo's owner was pursuing the escaped creature and came upon my friend laying in the road. Instead of helping him up or asking if everything was all right, the rancher started yelling at my friend for hurting his buffalo. When my friend called the sheriff in the hopes of getting things settled, the sheriff came and told Rich that since he was on a road through open grazing land, the buffalo had the right of way, and the farmer had every right to expect him to pay damages if the buffalo was hurt. Amazing. I don't know. Do you think the Girls Gone Wild bus had a case against the cyclist? I don't think so. The next one comes to us from listener Mark, and Mark is responding to the story a few weeks ago about the London mayor saying that he thought that cyclists and bicycles should be licensed. And Mark goes on to say, in Fredcast 27, you did a piece on motorists and cyclists and the risk involved with the two being mixed. I worked in law enforcement for 6 years. I feel that if cyclists end up having to be licensed, then we'll all be taking up our share of the road. No more swivel hipping around roadkills, washouts, and trash. I have mixed feelings for this either way it goes. It can give us more protection in court when it's really too late because you got bashed, but it'll be insanely expensive. I'm sure that insurance would be required too. Motorists in general don't really care about cyclists. They'll move over some when it's convenient, and they might give you the benefit of the doubt in a congested area. However, it's been my experience that if they're on a cell phone or in a hurry, they'll use that car as a weapon. I had a car make a right-hand turn right on top of me, causing me to slam into the passenger side door. The driver kept going into the parking lot of the gas station she was turning into. I actually had to chase her down to get her to acknowledge me. She had an employee hospital tag on her. Jeez! Anyway, I'm glad you're addressing these issues. I think the best we can do is set the example. And that's exactly what I talked about in the news section today when I read that column. So keep that in mind as well. Next, I got an email from listener Steven in Japan, and he was following up on my story last week about road rash. And he says, for road rash and other minor cuts, I recommend Manuka honey from New Zealand. And I put a link in the show notes for this. I had some road rash, which I didn't really take care of, and it got really infected and just wouldn't heal. And Manuka honey worked. And the good thing is, you can eat the honey too. Although I don't think after you've had it on your road rash, you're going to want to do that. Nevertheless, I have a friend who has several beehives. It's actually part of a learning experience for his kids. And he tells me the exact same thing. His wife is a nurse, and that he says honey is an excellent salve, something that is really good for wounds, especially if they're infected. So not necessarily something, I've never tried it, so I'm not necessarily endorsing it, but I did put a link in the show notes to a pretty good article that talks about using honey in the case of wound care. So keep that in mind as well. Next up comes an email from a listener in Ohio, and this is from listener Eric. And it's sort of a long email, so I'm just going to read bits and pieces. And he was talking about a few shows ago when I talked about the great bike maps that I was able to find when I was on my business trip in Hawaii and had the good fortune that at the end of the business day, I was able to go cycling before the sun went down. And so in his email, he says, I mentioned those maps, and he gives me a link to a great site from the Northeast Ohio Area-Wide Coordinating Agency. And they've done a really great job creating bike maps of the counties that make up the Cleveland area. So I've put a link in the show notes to that site. So if you're in the area, you'll be able to find some great maps. In addition, he's given some other great links for some amazing places where you can go riding, a list of Ohio cycling events, as well as to a link for a number of bike advocacy groups around the Cleveland area. So thank you, Eric, for sending those links and that information, and all those links can be found in the show notes. Okay, and finally, listener Rich wrote in to ask, I've recently started listening to your Fredcast, and I'm really enjoying them. However, maybe in an upcoming show, you could touch on how to retrieve shows from your archives. As a new listener, I've considered going back and listening to older shows, but I have a hard time finding them. This is actually a question I've gotten a lot, Rich, and I've made it easier for you to find my archives. Now, first of all, one way, if you're using a podcatcher like iTunes, every single one of my shows is in my RSS feed. So all you have to do is look back at some of the older shows, and if it's in iTunes, just click the Get button, and it'll be downloaded right to your computer. However, if you're not using a podcatcher, and perhaps maybe you're listening directly on your computer right from the website, I've added a new tab at the top of the page, aptly titled Archives. If you click that tab, it'll take you to a page that lists every one of my shows. Click on the link for the show that you'd like to listen to, and an MP3 will open up right there in your web browser, and you'll be able to listen right there on your computer, or you can save it to your computer for listening on any other device that you like. So I've made it a lot easier for you to find the archives of the show right there at www.thefredcast.com. Thanks to everyone who wrote in, and I will do this from time to time. I'll just grab some of your random letters and I'll read them on the show because I think that a lot of you are asking questions or making comments that a lot of other Fredcast listeners would be interested in hearing. So thanks for writing. Now, speaking of letters, listener Robbie wrote in to tell us about an upcoming ride on September 10th, 2006 called the Hancock Horizontal 100. Now, this ride is supposed to be the flattest ride in Ohio. Now, the 2006 Hancock Horizontal 100 takes place on September 10th, and there is a 32, a 62, and a 100-mile option. And I'm told that if you are a regular century rider and you want to ride the fastest century of the year, go out and ride the Hancock 100. I've put a link in the show notes to it. Thanks to listener Robbie for sending that in to us. Now, speaking of organized rides, I got an email from listener Neil in Beaverton, Oregon, who wanted to write in and just give a little bit of a review of the Livestrong ride that just took place in Portland. And he writes, this weekend was the Livestrong ride in Portland. Lance came and spoke to the audience and then rode the 70-mile route. He finished in about 3.5 hours while I took around 5. There was a 10, a 40, a 70, or a 100-mile route. Now, it was much smaller than last year's event with about 1,500 riders as opposed to about 3,500 last year. The 70-mile course was harder than last year, but quite enjoyable. There was a moderate headwind coming back in for the last 18 miles, which was not the most fun. I had a good ride, and the main venue this year was Portland Meadows instead of the main Nike campus. It was nice, and the food they fed us after the race was really good. One thing about this ride, it has fantastic support. There were plenty of porta-potties and plenty of food and water at all of the numerous rest stops. The folks would cheer for you as you rode in, and they even offered to hold my bike when I had to go. The routes themselves are well marked. A few turns could have had better sign placement, but, you know, what century can't have better sign placement? But also along the route, there were various signs reading, Mom, or Hydrate every 15 minutes, or Ride Safely, Pass with Caution, Road Narrows. Those are really great things for them to do. This was my second time doing the Livestrong ride, and I plan on doing it again next year. So, for those of you that are in Portland, when you see the signups come for Livestrong next year, listener Neil says he thinks that this is a ride that is definitely worth doing, and as I've mentioned here on the show before, it certainly is for a very, very worthy cause. Well, for a new product this week, I think this is one that you're going to find very interesting in light of all the news and all the things we've been talking about on the Fredcast the last couple of weeks. There is a site that I'd like you to go to. It's www.dopersuck.com. And this is the Dopers Suck organization. And they have a number of products there, but the one that I want to point you to is a pair of socks from the Sock Guy. And they are well known for making very high quality cycling socks. And these are black socks that quite simply say in very plain letters, "Dopers suck." Personally, I plan on getting a pair of these and wearing them proudly when I participate in the various events that I'm going to be participating in for the rest of the year. So that's the Dopers Suck organization at www.dopersuck.com. Show your support for honest cycling. And before we go tonight, just a quick reminder, the voting for the podcast awards is open until this Friday, August the 11th at midnight. And remember, the Fredcast has been nominated, thanks to you, in the health and fitness category, and I sure would appreciate your vote. You can vote once every 24 hours per email address, so please continue to vote every day. I appreciate your support. I'm honored to be nominated, but it sure would be nice to win. And that's going to do it for tonight's show. Thank you for listening. Thank you for staying subscribed. Remember the contest we have going. I want to get your audio comments and voicemails. You can send audio comments either into the email address at thefredcast@gmail.com. You can use the voicemail at 206-203-FRED, or you can click the audio comment button on the main page of the website at www.thefredcast.com and record your comment directly through Odeo. It's a great service. Of course, please continue to tell your friends about the show. I appreciate the word of mouth support. I also appreciate your votes at Podcast Alley, and I've put a little article on the website showing the statistics over the last couple of months of how we've stacked up against our competition on Podcast Alley, so I really appreciate those votes. We're going to end the show tonight, as we do every night, with PodSafe Cycling music, and our music comes to us from the PodSafe Cycling Network at music.podshow.com. Tonight's song is called All In on the Big Blind, and it's by Full Minute of Mercury. I've got links in the show notes to their personal website as well as to their Podshow website. So again, thank you for listening. It's always a pleasure to do the Fredcast, and I love hearing from you, and I'm so glad that you get as much out of the Fredcast as you keep telling me you do. It makes it all worthwhile. So until next week, until we meet again, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride. Seven and a two, and not a-